Another hour of Open Lines for you here on Coast to Coast AM. Boy, Dr. Sky was right when it was telling us about the Geminid meteor shower. 100 an hour. I saw six for the brief moment that I was watching. Just spectacular. If you've never seen a shooting star before, meteor, they're just unbelievable. I saw six of them just zooming by me last night after the show. Pretty something. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment. We'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Open Lines. Let's go east of the Rockies. Michael is with us in Virginia Beach. Michael, welcome to the show. Hi, Michael.
Hi, George. Congratulations on your new television show.
Thank you, Michael.
For your new listeners, how about a quick retrospective on your career here? I first heard you substituting in 2001.
That's right.
Spring of 2001.
First show was April 28th, 2001.
And then in January of 2003, January 1st, you took over as the main host of this show.
Yes, I did. You sound like my own PR guy.
And then you held that position for about 9 months, if I remember correctly, without a contract.
No. I had a contract beginning in September of 2002.
September 2002. That's right. Now we're coming to it. And on that night, you announced that you would probably do the show for 5 years and then retire. And a caller to the show told you that was absolutely crazy, that you should compare your own career to that of Don Hewlett, the producer
of 60 Minutes.
Of CBS 60 Minutes.
Actually, too, what I said, Michael, was, because it was 10 years ago, I said, wouldn't it be interesting to retire after the Mayan calendar day 2012?
That came next.
Yeah.
But listen, you talked about retiring after 5 years, and that was way back in 2002. And look, there's a lesson here about success, and you are really a great model of it in this sense. Very few people talk about humility as a key to success, and I don't know of anybody in talk show anywhere. I'm so happy for your new television show, either in radio or in television, who expresses the humility that you express consistently night after night. And that is the main reason that this program is such a great success. Because in spite of that humility, which people often think of as being meek or weakness, no, you are tackling subjects more courageously than any other radio or television station or network in America. And tonight was a perfect example of it. Look at your guest tonight. You had on John Lott talking about more guns, makes us more safe. He was on a major network show tonight, and the man was brutalized. I'm not going to name the network, but the man was brutalized. He couldn't even get his point across. Why? No humility on the part of the host. Then you brought on Dr. Peter Breggin. Look, I listened to 10 hours of television today following this story, and not one psychiatrist appeared to call into question what these drugs, the role of these drugs in these mass killings. And yet you've had Dr. John Abramson, Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, one after another, telling us these things. And here's where I have a problem with your humility. I remember a program that you did with Dr. Wayne Dyer,
mm-hmm.
in which you talked about something that you had dreamed, something that had come to you, that you could one day become president. That's too small, George. Becoming president is too small.
No.
It'd be a huge mistake.
Now I'm blushing.
Now listen to me. It's a huge mistake. The president doesn't have the platform of influence that you have right now. There's only one thing lacking. You've got to lose the humility long enough to attack the competition that is not handling these subjects the way we do it on Coast to Coast. Now, I'm going to force you to do it, and here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to go to the churches in this country, and I'm going to tell them to start buying advertising to compare the difference between your show and these major network shows.
All right, go for that.
We're going to embarrass them out of what they do. The idea that they would never have a psychiatrist on saying what this man said tonight, that he doesn't prescribe these drugs, that he's never had a suicide case, he's never had one of these mass murderers, and he never prescribes these drugs because he believes they are the source of the problem. You've had one after another expert on this show telling us this. I have never seen it on a major network show, and I listened to seven of them for 10 hours today, and they never brought it up.
Well, we always do because we're cutting edge, Michael. Thanks for the compliments. Not necessary. Appreciate it. You've been a longtime listener of the program, and that's what's important to me. Thank you. Next up, let's go to Jonathan in Northern Arizona. Jonathan, welcome to the show. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Norrie.
You're welcome.
Pleasure's mine. Before I get to the main thing I talked to your screener about, mm-hmm. you allow me a suggestion for AJ and Joe.
Yeah.
AJ, if you can't afford your painkillers, try some flaxseed oil. It's relatively inexpensive, and it might help you with your pain. It helped me with mine.
Okay, good.
And Joe, if your lawyer isn't helping you with that, two suggestions for you. I believe it's called the Society for Retired Business Executives. He may be able to find an attorney there that will help him pro se.
Yeah, he's got to get his Social Security going. That's crazy. Yeah.
Well, if he gets in touch with one of these retired attorneys, they'd probably be more than happy to help him. And the other suggestion being that he's in New York, and I grew up in Albany, but he's right there where there's a couple of marvelous law schools.
What about the AARP? Will they help him?
They might, but if he goes to the law schools and finds somebody there who's in law school who wants to practice that type of law, he may be able to get them to help him, but it won't cost him anything. It'll be a win-win situation.
Okay, good
tips. It'll help the student, and it'll help him. So just those two suggestions for those two people.
Okay.
With your last caller, and I started listening, I think, 6 years before you took over, and I had just gotten used to Mr. Bell and the venue of the program, mm-hmm. and I was amazed that it was on, and you've done a marvelous job picking up the ball and running with it, but then again, you're a fellow Gemini, so I didn't doubt it, but you've done a marvelous job. Now, the reason that I called was I talked to your screener, because I live here in Arizona, and we actually did away with our concealed carry law. We have a total open carry law in Arizona. And if you check the crime stats in most of Arizona, we have one of the lowest crime rates
in
the country. Now, Phoenix is kind of an exception to the rule because Phoenix has its problems.
And open carry, just for people who don't know, means that you can literally carry your gun on the outside, on your belt, wherever, where people can see it.
Exactly. Now, I've always felt kind of opposite of the open carry and concealed carry, because there is the school of thought that open carry antagonizes some people.
And it also could make you a target for the perpetrator. You know, if they see you with a gun, they can kind of like sneak up behind you or something.
Well, if you're going to carry a gun, you have to be very aware of your surroundings. You've got no business carrying a gun if you're not aware of your surroundings.
That's true.
That's number one.
Yep.
You know, and if you carry a gun, you know, my wife is from Great Britain, and we've been married 17 years, and she was always very much against guns because that's the mentality she grew up in. And when she finally, a year and a half ago, asked me to get her a handgun, I sat her down and I said, honey, I said, I'll be more than happy to get you a handgun, teach you how to use it, but the first thing that you need to do is have your conversation with God in case you have to ever use it. I said, don't think about having that conversation when the time comes that you might need to use it. Have that conversation now, or you're going to get yourself into trouble, because if you ever need to use it and it's taken away from you, you're going to end up being on the victim list.
That's right.
That's a suggestion to anybody.
If you're going to carry a gun,
a gun,
you better be ready to use it if you need it.
That'll be great to use. And the reason that I called was a couple years ago, I read this article, and I cannot remember the name of the town, but it was, I believe it was either in Missouri or Oklahoma. It was a small town like the small town I live in. And they actually instituted a law through their town council that every head of household mandatorily had to own a gun. That little town has almost a zero crime rate. Maybe your researchers can find it. I tried to find it on the internet. I can't find it. Another suggestion, I grew up in upstate New York.
I think it was I think it might have been in Georgia.
Maybe I'm a state off, but it was a few years back, and I can't remember, but I remember reading the article, and I looked it up, and I said, well, this is amazing. And it's kind of Mr. Locke's theory, more guns, less crime. Because if the bad guys go, the good guys are armed, they tend to not want to be in that type of environment.
It might have been Kennesaw, Georgia.
Maybe that was it. Now, in the small towns that I've lived in Maryland and Virginia and here in Arizona, and even down, we lived in the Phoenix Valley for 3 years, suggestion I would have for anybody, if they're going to own a gun, is get to know your local police and let them know that you are armed. And let them know that you'll back them up if they run into trouble. Because most municipalities do not have enough police to do the job that they need to do. They just don't have the budgets for it. And I know you and I are on the same page with our respect for law enforcement. There's very few of them that shouldn't be there. Most of them are there for the right reasons. But if you let your local law enforcement know that you're armed, all the police in my town know I am armed at all times. And they all know that if anything ever happened and I saw them in trouble, I'll back them up. Without even thinking twice about it. We actually have laws in this country that say that you are supposed to defend your fellow citizenry. We have laws that were installed.
I remember a case a couple of years ago where a police officer was in trouble. Do you remember that? And a armed citizen came to his rescue.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what you're supposed to do. But a lot of people are unaware of that, and they've listened to all this diatribe, in my mind, not to be judgmental, of people who are not pro-Second Amendment. They don't understand that a gun is a tool. It's, you know, it's always referred to as a weapon. It's a tool.
See, I just...
Money is a tool.
The principal got shot in that school today, but it's unfortunate that nobody in that school had a gun. And they could have at least taken that kid out before he killed any more people. Let me take some more calls here before the break. We'll pick it up by going to Hamilton, Ontario. Brett is with us on Coast to Coast on the international line. Brett, go ahead.
Greetings, George, and sympathy from Canada.
Thank you.
In regards to today's tragic events, I, like many others, was glued to the television. Trying to establish what happened, the facts, the everything that, you know, the sensationalism of it. It was horrifying. It was terrible. I'd like to thank you for having this forum tonight that people like myself can call in and, you know, listen to others and add our opinions.
And express your views without getting attacked and belittled.
Well, I was just going to say that. I've been on hold for over an hour, Joe.
Oh, my God.
And... So when I initially called, I thought perhaps the doctor would still be joining us to offer his opinion to perhaps my perspective on the day's events. But no offense to you, of course.
Of course.
Is it still appropriate if I share my opinion?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All day, everyone has been saying, why? Why do you do it? Why did this happen? Why did that happen? Well, I'm not a professional anything. I'm just a... Joe Average listener of Coast to Coast, and which makes you smarter, I believe. Listening to Coast to Coast.
Well, you're right about that.
I think at things outside the box.
There's got to be an IQ test study. I bet Coast to Coast listeners are more knowledgeable about world events and name it.
What I lack in IQ, I think I make up an EQ. So my perspective today, I don't want to take up a lot of time here because I have a lot to say. My perspective was the why, and I believe the turning point of the day happened when the son met his mother at her condominium, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to gather as much information today using my Sherlock Holmesian deduction, and I was thinking, they had mentioned that she was not a teacher, but a teacher's aide at that school. Now, she hadn't worked, apparently, in weeks. And unfortunately, the principal, that lady today, was shot. And they profiled her and said that, you know, she was very professional, very courteous,
mm-hmm.
but she was a very good disciplinarian and whatever. And I'm thinking perhaps the principal got a bad vibe from the mother in some way. Maybe she found out she had guns or something, but there was a vibe. The principal didn't like her, maybe didn't sign her up for a teacher's aide position. She's losing money. It's close to Christmas. This is where I think I'm looking outside the box. My perspective is that perhaps the son did not kill the mother, but either the son walked into the home and found his mother dead, or the mother killed herself in front of the son. The son reacted, went to the school, and went after the so-called guilty parties that may have harmed his mother.
Well, you know, anything's possible. We've got to let it unfold. But, I mean, there's no doubt the kid was whacked out. I'm not sure if one...
You understand, everyone's saying, oh, they're just assuming he shot his mother.
Yeah, they are. That's true.
I can't see him shooting a single parent if they were divorced. He might have been close to his mother.
Yeah, but if you don't shoot your parent, let's assume he did not shoot his mother.
Right. He reacted to her death.
You go ahead and kill 26 other people?
Because in sort of revenge, perhaps, for his mother's death, taking her life, she was sad, she was not working, she was distraught, she was losing money, it's close to Christmas, it's a time of happiness, she's sad, he reacted, he may have found her.
And maybe she confided with him?
Oh, definitely confided in him, definitely, and I think he just took out all this anger on the school. He would have no motive to go to the school. Why would he go to the school and do that? I don't see the logic in that. The connection is with the mother and the school. The connection to the son to the mother. He must have seen something. He must have heard something.
Something happened. I agree with you there. Something happened.
No one discussed this. Everyone assumes he shot his mother. And I do not think that he would have done that to a single mother that was divorced.
Will forensics be able to determine if he did or not? I'm not sure.
Well, I'm sure she would have a range. They could figure out where the gun was close to her head, or she was shot in the body.
We don't know how she was shot and what gun.
But I'm using that deduction to figure out the why.
There'll definitely be a ballistics test done on the bullet
Absolutely.
That killed her.
She'll have gunpowder on her hands,
yeah.
or whichever. But I think the key to the case is at her house.
Well, you bring up an interesting theory.
Yes, that's
it's, definitely.
I was lying in bed. Ready to sleep, and it hit me, and the open lines came up, and I thought, damn it, I'm going to call.
You know what?
I'm going to call my buddy George.
I am sure law enforcement is probably going to weigh that possibility.
Well, I can't see it. If you backtrack and then work forward.
Unless they find a letter written by this kid or something.
Or the mother, or a conflict between the principal and the mother.
Whatever.
I'm saying that it's not that cut and dry that he just walks and kills his mother this close to Christmas. I do not believe that. To be the cut and dry, the black and white of it. Do you understand? And I think just discussing this, you know, hypothetically, you know, using my coast-to-coast IQ, I'm coming to this different perspective. You know, I'm astral projecting my...
Well, let me tell you, I don't think you can rule it out. That's for sure. We're going to hit this break. We're going to come back with the final phone calls. Fast night tonight. Open lines. Very sad night, by the way. Not even going to wish you to have a great weekend. I just want you to think a little bit about the families and what they went through and are going through. I'll be back in a moment. We'll take the rest of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, Coast to Coast live for you 7 nights a week on Saturday. John B. Wells will have a split show, including Stephen Quayle, talking about Angel Wars. Make sure you're part of that. And then on Sunday, George Knapp with a split program as well, including, of course, film director Oliver Stone joining him to talk about the untold history of the United States. Okay, next Friday now, December 21st, that's the program we're going to use for our Mayan calendar end date. Who knows what's going to happen? Frankly, I don't think much is going to happen. I think we'll still be here Saturday and Sunday. But I do believe eventually something with the sun is going to happen, and I think the Mayans knew that. But make sure you're part of the program. We're going to have a number of guests who have been on Coast to Coast since we've been talking about this for 10 years. And, you know, let's just see what happens. We're going to take a lot of your phone calls, and let's get us through that. January 6th, Sunday night, we're going to use that as my 10-year anniversary party on the air. So make sure you're part of that. And also, again, we're going to be live on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. So we'll celebrate that as well. So we've got some great times coming up for you here on Coast to Coast AM. And let's go back to some final calls. Dave in San Jose, California. Welcome to the program, David.
Good evening, George. I want to, well, congratulate. Well, first of all, Merry Christmas to you and your family.
You too.
And happy anniversary on the 21st of this month for the show. And it's going to be a great thing. George, I have a nonprofit organization to help kids stay in school away from drugs, gangs, violence, and weapons.
Okay.
And one of the things that I always see is one of the most important things of our communities is, you know, having, it all starts, having, you know, the role model start, you know, the characters, the structure, the foundation starts at home with parents and you know, an example, my young brother, you know, was brutally murdered in 2009 in East Palo Alto, California. And, you know, the young fellow that shot him used a similar gun like this other individual that opened fired in Connecticut. And one of the things, you know, and you ask yourself, how do these young people get a hold of such powerful arms? You know, who sells it to them?
In this guy's case, he took his mother's weapons. His mother's guns, and he got them. I don't know why she didn't have them locked up, but he got them.
Well, exactly, and that's what we go back to. You know, the foundation at home. I mean, what are the parents teaching kids at home? I mean, you know, for having such guns in open, you know, range where he's able to reach out and grab a Hershey bar, almost, you know, to say that, but except it's a weapon, you know, a deadly weapon. I mean, it all starts at home. And, you know, I literally, I don't feel sorry for a lot of parents in this country, but, you know, I blame parents. I blame parents because, you know, kids grow up and they, you know, start from young age, stealing, gang bang, you know, and it goes on and on and on, you know, with it gets worse and worse as they get older. And before you know it, it becomes a career. It becomes a great foundation for them, but not a great foundation for, you know.
Well, you're doing a great job doing what you're doing, and keep doing it, because we need a million people like you, you know, donating and helping. And our condolences to you on the loss of your brother. That's a tragic thing, too. Let's take a few more calls here. This is our final segment of Open Lines. I can't believe how fast this night has gone, but what a day. I can't wait for this day to get over. Kate is in Maui in Hawaii, Wildcard Line. Hey, Katie, go ahead.
Hi, George. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I was thinking, I think we're going to be seeing more and more craziness for one reason. You know, we're getting a lot more magnetic pull for the planets are starting to line.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And you know how it is with full moons. We're going to get triple that. And they say, it, you know, it's already high tides are flooding the streets of Los Angeles. And they say that that really affects people mentally, like a full moon, but this is going to be like on steroids.
Yes, sure is.
As it's coming into the 21st, one of your guests a week or so ago, I don't think it was the night you were there, he was talking about an example of a Russian cosmonaut was up in the space station and was inadvertently exposed to a lot of magnetic field, and all of a sudden they couldn't get a hold of him, and so they sent another cosmonaut up to rescue him, and they brought him down, and he went He went nuts. And the same thing happened to the one that they sent up to rescue him. So it's really powerful. And so I wouldn't be surprised if things didn't get just become really wacky in the next little while here. What I heard, so I don't know.
It makes sense because
I know full moons do enough already, and the tides are literally, the high tides in Southern California are flooding into the streets.
Well, we don't want that. That was Sterling Allen, by the way, who was on with me when we talked about the radiation from the cosmonauts up there. Thanks for the call. Let's go now to Dublin, California. John, wildcard line. Go ahead, John. Thanks.
Good evening. As I told your seeker, I don't have the internet deliberately. And she says, well, don't you have any people? I say, yes, my 8 children, I believe, all have the internet. But the problem is I don't have a cellular radio, what most people call a cell phone. And I'd sort of like to sneak in a bit of an editorial, even though it's, you send your editorials to coasttocoast.com, it says. But on the open forum.
You're gonna get it now, so you might as well take your shot. Go ahead.
I'd like to editorialize. Can you not, and you are not alone, have real addresses for people to send comments, kudos, compliments, and complaints?
You can do that, but you mean like a written thing?
Yeah.
Oh my God! We couldn't handle the load. I don't have that kind of staff to do that.
And yet they could handle the load of
We all do our own emails.
Emailing.
Yeah, I do that. You do that. If you send me an email, I could do that. But you know, if we got our own letters, and we solicited for them, I mean, it would be like Santa Claus bringing buckets of mail here. You should see what happens when we do our emerging artists. You know what we do on the first Sunday of every month for 2 hours, the bumper music, emerging artists, people who don't have an opportunity to let anybody hear their stuff on the radio. So we help them out. Tom's office is loaded because that's his job. He's the emerging artist producer. His job is to do that. His room, it looks like a record label place. I mean, it's huge, full of stuff. Drawers, thousands of them. Thousands of them. I guess your odds now of getting on as an emerging artist are like winning the lottery. That's how many we have. But we can't solicit letters. I mean, we just can't. Let's go next to Montana. TS is with us, first time caller. Hello, TS.
Hey, George, how's it going?
I am holding on, T.S.
That's awesome. Hey, I just want to say Merry Christmas to you, your family, your staff.
You too. Thank you.
Also, God bless. The gentleman that was talking about how he, you know, blames the parents. I don't 100% agree with that. I think it's more economic.
It may be a combination of everything. You know, if the parents were abusive to the kid, you know, who knows what happens to crack a little mind that grows up, you know?
Yeah. Well, I had told your screener that basically what I think it should be is I really honestly blame economics. And the reason being is because almost every single family needs a mother and a father out at some job working for somebody else in order to bring enough money home to support the family and the household.
It's not like the old days.
No, and I remember when my grandfather used to, I mean, he brought me, my mom, my aunts and uncles all down to like Florida. We went to South Carolina. We went all over it when I was like 3 months old. I don't remember this, but we went to the Grand Canyon. I mean, and I'm originally from New York. So, I mean, to go out to Arizona, and he worked for Sears.
Well, you know what? I remember with my family, my dad and my mother, we never had a television set in the kitchen where we ate. We always had it in a little tiny family room, and we would watch TV as a family. We would have dinner without a television on. And, you know, those days I think are gone. I think people are splintered. I'm not even sure what the percentage of the families that all eat together. You know, I think one kid is eating, watching TV. Another kid is up in his room with his sandwich or something like that. I don't think families sit down and eat together anymore. Not a lot of them. Not a lot of them. We don't have that much time to get your reaction to that, but not a lot. Let's go to Paul in Denver. Welcome to the show. Hey, Paul, thank you for calling.
Hey, George, what an honor. I got a ghost story and then a quick comment on that tragedy.
Sure.
My son was 2.5 years old, and he woke up in the middle of the night. I was at work, and he came into my wife's room and asked for a sippy cup of milk. So my wife got up to get him a sippy cup, and when she came back into the room, he had this look of fear on his face, and then he just started crying. So my wife asked him what happened, and he said that a lady with ouchies all over her face had come into the room and was asking him where the train was.
Whoa.
And he said,
ouchies.
You know, to her, and she said to him that he was a naughty boy, and he said, shh, and she pinched his lips, he said, and he said that her hands were really cold, and he told the same story. You know, it's not, I don't think that he was making it up or anything, but he said that the lady, you know, as my wife walked into the room, walked right past her out the door, and, you know, my wife never saw anything. My wife was really concerned about that, so she called, you know, one of the paranormal investigators in town. And they were working on putting in a new light rail line right past our house.
Okay.
And they were thinking, the paranormal investigator thought that with the unearthing of the dirt and, you know, all the old history of the railroads through there, that maybe this, you know, they opened up a vortex where this lady was able to come through, or this apparition.
Or maybe she was buried out there.
Yeah. And it was a really scary situation. My wife called me and was freaking out. She wanted me to come home from work.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, it was so weird how he, you know, he doesn't know anything about ghosts or anything, but he said that she was cold when she touched him. She pinched his lips when he kept telling her to, you know, he kept telling her, shh, and she pinched his lips. So it was a really weird story, but nothing ever happened after that, you know. It's just kind of that one little incident.
She went away. She jumped on the train when it was built, and off she went.
Yep. And then as far as that shooting, they've taken away our right to possess armor-piercing bullets. And nowadays, all those idiots seem to think that putting on a flak jacket and a helmet, you know, they can go shooting at places. I think they need to bring back our right for armor-piercing bullets so we have a means to stop these people that think they're invincible with their armor-proof jackets on.
Yeah, I mean, wearing ski masks, hockey masks, and all that stuff, too.
Yeah, you'll never see a mass shooting at a gun show. I'll guarantee you that, George.
No, I haven't heard of one yet. I really have.
Thanks for letting me be on your show, George. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Paul. Let's go to Fred, Washington, D.C. Fred, take it away.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
I'm on a cell phone, and I'm standing out in the cold at 38 degrees.
And you've been out there for a long time, haven't you?
I've been out here for about an hour.
Sorry about that, Fred.
I really wanted to call because something suspicious happened.
What happened?
My wife received a text on her cell phone. They're a government. My wife works for the government.
Okay.
And she received a notice on Thursday that there was a shooting in Connecticut.
You're kidding me.
And this morning when it came on the news, she said, this is old news. And I said, what do you mean it's old news? She said, this happened yesterday. And I said, well, I just heard about it on the radio, and she was watching it on TV. She didn't have all the details, but she told me that the shooter's mother had been shot, and they hadn't even told that on TV yet.
She knew that from the text message?
She knew that from some text that she got yesterday.
Is that uncommon for...
Before yesterday now.
Let me ask you this, Fred. Is that uncommon for her to get a text message, and who sent it?
Well, no. She's got a thing. She's a security specialist.
Okay.
And I can't tell you what department she's with, but it came in. And we would actually drove down there because I said, if you can prove that, it'd be great. And when she went down there, it had been deleted, even though she didn't delete it.
Is it? What do you mean she did? She did not delete it. It's still on her phone?
No, but they have control over her computer access, and we don't have computer here at home, so she couldn't have seen it here at home.
All right, but she does she have it on her phone right now?
No, no. We only have track phones. The pay-as-you-go. And that's only because they got rid of all the...
Well, how did she see the text message in the first place?
She saw it at work yesterday.
Oh, at work. It came over the work computer, you're saying.
Right, but she wasn't there today. She was had a doctor's appointment and wasn't there.
She saw that the day before this happened.
She saw the day before this happened that the shooter killed his mother and that he attacked her. A school in Connecticut. And
a day before.
I know it was Connecticut even before it came on the air.
A day before it happened. That's weird.
The day before. But then it was deleted without her doing it. And
so we don't have any evidence or proof.
She didn't really want me to call you.
I understand. All right. Well, I wish she still would have been able to have that before they deleted it. That would have been interesting. A lot of times when Kennedy was shot, newspapers in Europe had the story before he was shot. They had Oswald arrested before Oswald was arrested. Go figure that, huh? Well, please say a little prayer for the families of the victims. This is going to be a very sad Christmas for all of them. And some of them may just never get over the tragedy that unfolded today. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Tim Banal, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.